friends are listening to Irish Radio Network, USA. Delighted to welcome Christine Keneally, a visiting scholar in residence at Quinnipiac University, the home of Ireland's Great Hunger Museum. Christine, a world-renowned authority on the Irish famine, and we are delighted to link with you, Christine, at Quinnipiac University in Hamden and at the Ireland's Great Hunger Museum. You're very welcome to the program.
Thank you. Thank you.
You know, considering the week that's in it, I know that you are indeed considered the world authority on the Irish famine, the Great Hunger. But there are, but you've worked extensively and continue to do so on what I suppose we consider to be modern history, history of the 1900s and up to the present. The topic, obviously, this week has the topic of the passing of former Prime Minister Margaret Thatcher has had enormous reaction. The extremes, those who, as we would say in the West of Ireland, couldn't see any harm in her, and those who would categorize her pretty much with respect to Ireland as a great sidekick for Cromwell. How historically will Margaret Thatcher be remembered in Ireland and in the history of Ireland?
Yeah, I think what you said about people seeing no harm in her, I think it's natural that when people die, people want to honour their memory and be very positive. But I think we must remember that even in the end, her own party wanted to get rid of her. So even within her own Conservative Party, she was very divisive. And I think that's really the mark of Margaret Thatcher, that both in death as in life, she was divisive. And I think in Ireland, she's particularly divisive. There are particular memories of her, which I can come into in greater detail. But also in Britain, she was a very divisive figure. So I think at the moment, people recognize she's dead, that her family are perhaps grieving. So they want to talk about the good things, maybe her good legacy. But I think in the longer term, she'll be seen as one of the most divisive figures ever to emerge in British and Irish politics.
Mm. Divisive is probably as close as we can get, to description, of how she affected people. Obviously, her strong and her uncompromising style of leadership had to come from somewhere, and there are many who feel that, particularly with respect to Ireland, before she got into office, before she got into office, her friend and her political mentor was killed by the Provisional IRA by an army bomb. What was her name again?
Éire Neave.
Yeah.
So some people feel that shaped her views towards Ireland. I think probably she had very little sympathy towards Ireland anyway. Certainly none ever manifested itself during her 11-year rule as British Prime Minister. But yes, just before she got into power, he was a personal friend, he was her political ally, he was her political mentor, Éire Neave, and he was blown up by an IRA bomb.
Yeah.
There's some talk that she was also intended to be part of that, but anyway, she survived. But I think it did shape her on a very personal level. But on a political level, I think with or without that, she had very little sympathy for Ireland. She was a unionist. She was somebody who very much believed in the United Kingdom and that as a consequence, Northern Ireland was part of this so-called United Kingdom.
It's hard to even remember or reflect on Margaret Thatcher for Irish people and indeed for those who are interested in humanity and in justice without remembering that not only did she not waver during the hunger strike and the hunger strikers in Northern Ireland, but she seemed to smirk her way through it, and I think that's probably one of the characteristics. And indeed, she didn't smirk much, but
yeah.
it was almost like I could care less. It is almost like, well, you know, and maybe you covered that for us. The hunger strike, the hunger strikers.
Yeah, because there were two hunger strikes, and it sort of emerged partly out of a policy that she very much promoted. It was sometimes called Ulsterisation, and it was this idea that what was happening in the north of Ireland wasn't due to political reasons, it was just because people were criminals and thugs, etc.
Mm-hmm.
And so she really wanted to criminalise people who were involved in political activities in the north, particularly, of course, the Republicans. And so one of the consequences of that was that all prisoners, in fact, were denied political status. So whereas before they'd gone in prison, they were able to dress in their normal clothes, to have educational facilities, to organize in their own groupings, this policy meant that they were, in fact, just treated the same as all the other prisoners within the Northern Ireland prisons. So there were some prisoners who decided that the only way they could draw attention to what was happening was by having a hunger strike. So there was a hunger strike in 1980, at the end of 1980. A number of prisoners went on hunger strike at the same time, looking for what was called the Six Demands. And the Conservative government actually agreed to them, and so the hunger strike was called off. Very interestingly, women in Armagh prison were also involved in the hunger strike. But anyway, at the end of 1980, the hunger strike was called off, and shortly after it was called off, it became very clear that the government were not going to keep their promise in regard to political status for prisoners. So this led to the more famous 1981 hunger strike, which we know was led by Bobby Sands. And he decided that rather than everybody go on hunger strike at the same time, it should be staggered. And so Bobby Sands himself went on hunger strike in March 1981. And at that point, he knew it was probable that he would die. He went on hunger strike knowing that, and other people were to follow at a staggered intervals. But what made the hunger strike really remarkable, and nobody predicted at the time, was that during his period on hunger strike, Bobby Sands was actually elected as an MP to the British Parliament. And this had all sorts of consequences, but people then began to wonder, could the British Prime Minister allow a fellow member of the British Parliament to die on hunger strike? And we know the answer is yes, she could. And so Bobby Sands and nine other young Republican prisoners died as a result of her intransigence, her refusal to negotiate, and almost, I don't want to say her joy, but she almost seemed to delight in allowing these men to make this ultimate sacrifice. And world opinion was shocked by what was going on. The government knew that world opinion was shocked, and people within Britain were very uneasy at what Margaret Thatcher was doing. But again, it was very much in her style of governing that she really relished this sort of confrontation. Another thing which she failed to do was when Bobby Sands died as a member of the British Parliament, she should have made a brief speech acknowledging his death. she refused to do so. So she really flouted parliamentary conventions. But the hunger strike, the death of these 10 young men, and really the needless death of these 10 young men, is very much remembered within Ireland. And I think there's always, to me in my mind, there's always a juxtaposition between the smiling face of the young Bobby Sands and the harsh grimace of Margaret Thatcher. And it just seems such a strong, strong contrast.
What was the relationship with the White House and with our own State Department and what is referred to as the special relationship between Washington and London at the time?
Again, some of the facts are emerging, but what is very clear is that for much of her time in power, Ronald Reagan was also in power, and they seem to have a very close relationship. We know now that privately Margaret Thatcher was a bit dismissive of Ronald Reagan in terms of his intellectual ability, but publicly they were very, very close. And Ronald Reagan, of many American presidents, really didn't seem to have much of an Irish policy. And you really waited till Bill Clinton came to power that the impasse was broken, with Gerry Adams being given a visa to go to the United States. So really not too much happened in regard to Ireland. Ronald Reagan came to Ireland in 1984. At that time, he was associated with Margaret Thatcher. I was a student in Dublin in 1984. I remember it very well, how people were very nervous about this relationship.
Right. And in hindsight, for good reason, you know.
Yes, absolutely.
Bowing to pressure... public pressure, not only on, obviously, not only was she a thorn to nationalists and Republicans, but also she alienated unionists and unionist allies in Ireland through the signing of the Anglo-Irish Agreement. That was a year later, 1985. What was the Anglo-Irish Agreement, and why, in hindsight, do you think she did, you know, bow to the pressure there? I'm sure that must have been something that she actually regretted somewhere afterwards.
Yeah, and again, this is one of the ironies of Margaret Thatcher, that she was somebody who supported the Union, believed in the sanctity of the United Kingdom, yet she was willing to alienate Unionists. And I think that, again, says something about her character, her conviction, politics. So in 1985, she did sign the Anglo-Irish Agreement, which did alienate a lot of Unionists. They felt they'd been betrayed. It caused massive disruption on the streets, etc. This really, again, it came in the wake of the hunger strike, the increasingly deteriorating situation, the 1984 bomb at Brighton. So there was almost a feel that something had to be done. And in some ways, by signing this, she was alienating the Unionists, but she probably felt that she was moving the situation on in a way that suited her. But again, she just seemed to be answerable to nobody and really not in touch with feelings on the ground and what that would do to public opinion within Ireland. So by alienating everybody, again, she just polarized the situation, and just it meant that the conflict became even more entrenched. Again, I think it comes back to her style of politics and her refusal really to listen to people.
Yeah. Now, on those who, you know, defend Margaret Thatcher, you know, are saying, you know, that her treatment of Ireland and Northern Ireland, for somebody who actually not only believed but said, you know, that Northern Ireland was as British as Finchley, which is, you know, about comparing, you know, Times Square with New York. Could that have been something which totally interfered with any degree of understanding or you know, had this been kind of dismissed totally out of her mind, and those, as I say, who defend Margaret Thatcher say, well, she did great things with the economy. England, Britain was on its knees, and she was she had some successes, some credits that actually worked within the framework of, you know, her intransigence.
Yeah, I just can't see that. Yeah, she made that statement, very stupid statement, that Northern Ireland was as British as Finchley. Finchley is quite a well-off area in London. And you, it's just nonsense. This is a time in the 1980s. I lived in Belfast where there were, you know, the Diplock courts, helicopters, police checks, barbed wire, bombs. Even when she visited, she came in a flak jacket. I don't think she ever wore a flak jacket to visit Finchley. So it was just absolute arrant nonsense and arrogance again. So, again, I just can't see that by making those statements, she actually helped the situation in any way. In regard to Britain, again, just what this last few days have shown, that she's a majorly divisive figure within Britain. The miners' strike, where she really, again, showing her intransigence, she went out to break up the mining communities. She really tore down the steel industry, the whole infrastructure of Britain's industries. But she did it in the way she handled the hunger strikes, in an overtly confrontational way. Yes, London expanded, but so did the number of homelessness. The national health system was virtually destroyed. I remember, she in schools, they were without money. She took away their budget. She took away their free milk. She interfered in every aspect of life. And I think Britain is suffering the legacy in terms of her lack of regulation. She introduced a national curriculum into the British school. She interfered with that. She really did she changed Britain so much because she interfered in so many aspects. But I think the legacy shows that, in fact, she didn't leave behind a strong economy. She didn't inherit one, but nor did she leave one behind. And people suffered as a result very much of what she did. Whole communities suffered. And I think Britain, there was civil disorder in a way that Britain hadn't seen for decades, if not for hundreds of years. So again, I think this week is a week for mourning, but I think when this immediate period is over, historians will look back more dispassionately and see her legacy was very, very mixed. Outside of Britain, maybe she's remembered more fondly, but not in Britain and not in Ireland. I think the other thing to remember was how undemocratic she was. She introduced censorship to the BBC so that people couldn't hear the voice of Gerry Adams. When Gerry Adams was elected in Northern Ireland, she refused to allow him to travel to Britain. So she was, at heart, quite undemocratic.
Final question. How did she last 11 years before the wrath even of her own followers and her own party caught up with her?
I think initially people did want to change. The fact she was a woman was something novel. The fact she seemed to have a lot of conviction. So she seemed to be a person of great strength. But one of the reasons why she survived was that the Labour Party was in such disarray. And the Labour Party was undergoing its own internal conflicts, which eventually led to New Labour with Tony Blair. So that was partly why she survived. But again, she was elected three times. The third election, she had less than 50% of the vote. And during her third term in office, it was her own party who got rid of her. So although, yes, she survived, she was increasingly unpopular.
Christine Keneally, thank you for, as usual, giving us some focus and insight into what, regardless of how her passing will be perceived, history will record. Again, I think you've put your finger on it as probably the person whose greatest strength was in divisiveness. Thank you for joining us today.
Thank you. Thank you, Adrian. Bye now.
And friends, you're listening to Irish Radio Network, USA.